But that's not the right thing. The right thing is, hey, they're willing to pay that much for the idea that I could. And unless we bring something where we can say, yes, you can, you could. It is about dreams, because car is a dream product. It is the big story of humankind for any economic history or any industry. It's by far the best. We have to give a bigger dream.
Moin und willkommen bei Freifahrt, dem Interview-Podcast zum Thema Mikromobilität rund um Fahrräder, E-Scooter, Lastenfahrräder und neuen Fahrzeugkonzepten. Hier spreche ich mit Expertinnen, Unternehmerinnen, Herstellern, Entscheidern, Enthusiasten und auch Kritikern über die Zukunft der Mobilität. Mich interessiert, warum das Fahrrad seit 200 Jahren existiert und dennoch weniger Beachtung findet als E-Scooter, welche innerhalb von weniger als 2 Jahren in aller Munde sind. Ich möchte herausfinden, was wir tun müssen, damit Mikromobilität mehr Beachtung bei der Verkehrsplanung bekommt und wir so in Zukunft in gesünderen und lebenswerteren Städten leben können. Mich fasziniert, warum es in Holland und Dänemark selbstverständlich ist, mit einem Lastenfahrrad unterwegs zu sein und wir hierzulande wiederum kostenlosen Parkraum als selbstverständlich erachten. Ich möchte von meinen Gesprächspartnern und Gesprächspartnerinnen lernen und so für euch einen 360-Grad-Blick auf Fahrzeuge, Anbieter, Strategien, Politik bedenken und auch Potenziale werfen. Mein Name ist Sebastian Hofer und heute habe ich die Ehre, mit einem der Pioniere von MaaS zu sprechen, also Mobility as a Service, und zwar Sampo Hietanen. Sampo ist der Gründer und CEO von MaaS Global aus Helsinki, für die meisten womöglich besser bekannt unter dem Namen WIM. Obwohl Sampo übrigens hervorragend Deutsch spricht, haben wir das Interview diesmal auf Englisch geführt. Bei dem Konzept Mobility as a Service geht es ja vor allem um ein neues Wertverständnis von Mobilität und nicht nur um das Ersetzen dessen, was wir aktuell haben, nämlich hauptsächlich private Autos auf den Straßen. Genauso argumentiert Sampo auch, nämlich, dass die bisher vorherrschenden Argumente des rationalen Vergleichs zwischen einem Auto und einer Mobility as a Service Flatrate nicht funktionieren. Er spricht davon, dass die Branche neue Träume und Wunschbilder schaffen muss. Und dabei sind genau Verlässlichkeit und Komfort laut Sampo zwei der wichtigsten Treiber für eine neue Mobilitätskultur. Wenn wir von dem Wert von Mobilität sprechen, müssen wir logischerweise auch über das Geschäftsmodell von MaaS sprechen und wieso es notwendig ist, sozusagen die Produktionskosten von Mobilität von dessen Wert zu entkoppeln. Denn nur so können wir neue Wertschöpfung ermöglichen. Völlig nachvollziehbar finde ich die Forderung außerdem, dass wir erstmal die enorm hohen Ausgaben für private Autos quasi freischaufeln müssen, um sie dann neu ausgeben zu können. Wir sprechen außerdem darüber, wie ein Wandel mit Erlebnissen zusammenhängt, welche den NutzerInnen auf den Leib geschneidert sein müssen. Dafür braucht es jedoch eine sehr, sehr umfangreiche und langwierige Forschung und eben ein neues Verständnis von dem Wert von Mobilität. Und wie gesagt, genau darüber sprechen wir heute, über den Wert von Mobilität. Doch bevor es losgeht, möchte ich wieder einmal darauf hinweisen, wie du mich und meinen Podcast Freifahrt unterstützen kannst. Wenn dir der Podcast gefällt und du regelmäßig zuhörst, dann kannst du mich bei der Produktion entweder einmalig per PayPal oder auch regelmäßig auf Steady mit einem kleinen Beitrag unterstützen. Alle Links dazu findest du in den Shownotes und ich sage schon mal vielen, vielen Dank. Und jetzt wünsche ich wie immer viel Spaß beim Zuhören. So. Our current culture of mobility is somewhere between the very emotional status-oriented idea of owning a private car and being on the verge of commoditizing it as part of public transport. That's at least my idea. And this is why I would like to talk to you about the value of moving around, of accessing places, of accessing people and experiences. So I'm very happy to have you on my podcast, Sampo. Welcome to Freifahrt.
Thank you. Vielen Dank für Freifahrt.
For those who don't know you, Sampo, please go ahead and give those listeners a brief introduction into who you are and what WIM or MaaS Global is all about.
Yeah, so my name is Sampo Hietanen. If you're not a Finn, don't try to pronounce it. Also formerly known as the village idiot that talks about MaaS or mobility as a service all the time. And until it started becoming one more or less a bit buzzword. For years now, I've been fortunate enough to actually live the dream of doing a concept that I truly believe in. Founded the company called MaaS Global. We've been doing the WIM app or the WIM service for, the company was founded 2015. We started actually doing something 2016 and piloting and then being on the markets now for end of 2017, so a few years, but it feels like already all my life has been with Mars Global.
It's interesting. That's actually when we met the first time at the Mars Alliance, right? It was, I think, at the end of 2017, probably in Brussels.
Yeah, it seems like years and years ago now.
It does, yeah. Well, back then, I remember there was quite a different buzz in the industry, though, that mobility as a service is going to change everything in the mobility landscape. It kind of didn't really turn out like that, did it? But before we before we get into that, though, what made you think about mobility as a service in the first place?
Well, I'm actually a civil engineer from transportation by background. And I probably am a really bad one at that because never really did any actual transportation planning itself. Got mixed up with the big sort of rise of the WAP and SMS and all of these things. Coming from Finland, it was quite obvious with the Nokias and everything. Turn of the millennium was actually making, I think it was the world's first SMS-based route information system with road weather information and everything possible already at that time. Got into sort of this ITS for me. It meant traffic information one way or another given to different organizations and especially then consumers. I've been always sort of intrigued by that. If it doesn't have a consumer base, it's not really a new business. And did that. Actually, it was a civil engineering company, but we had joint ventures with the telecom company, so we worked quite intensely with them in bringing these together. And the whole thing got me thinking that information it's really great, but if you think of it this way, trying to sell traffic information, it's normally disturbance information, and it's a bit the same as if a telecom operator would be coming to you and say, hey, Sebastian, would you like to have a live map of the disturbances in the 3G network right now? And you definitely want to pay for seeing those disturbances. And you probably go on, why? That's your problem. Take care of it. I don't care. Just fix it, please. And the analogy has actually gotten me to the whole Mars thing, because it is, well, if we use a really bad joke or slogan in it, it is about connecting people, isn't it? They just did it virtually. We're actually doing it physically. And there is a good analogy. If you want to think what happens in this industry, it's a good way of looking at where the telecom industry was in the 80s and where they are now. Something similar will happen in this as well.
What about the focus on the user, the user's needs? Is there something that we can learn or that you thought is something that you want to put or transfer from telecom to mobility?
I think there's sort of a couple of interesting points to think about in this. If we take the analogy from the telecom industry, if I would have been in year 85, that's some of us were alive then, if you're an old geezer like me, 85, and someone would have said that, hey, this telecom industry, plugging phones to another, this will be the sexiest business on earth, and it will drive the world economy, and it will be the driver of innovation and economic growth and all of this. And that person would have been laughed out of the room and said, there's nothing fancy about this. We're just doing this all the time. That's it. There's nothing else in it. When it changed, and it changed by becoming personal. Nobody had in the 80s a personal mobile operator or personal device or anything like that. It was family phone. There's nothing really that fancy about that. It's just calling friends. Now, when it came personal, it kind of opened up a whole new, let's say, a treasure box of innovation. And we've seen the outcomes of that and how big value that brought. So that definitely is about the focusing on the individuality. The same thing is when we then go back to our beloved transportation, which is really interesting. And we have this dilemma all the time. We have the transport engineer approach, and then we have the winning approach. Sorry to say, this is a bit, I know, it's Friday afternoon, I get to do this. So
that's all right, go ahead. You're free to.
Since I am a learned transportation engineer, I get to mock us a bit. This is the rational approach. This is how people should be moved. This is how they go. This is how it's done. And then they buy cars because that's individual. That's for me. That's sold to me. That focus is on the individual creating value for them. And that's it. And there's
absolutely
sort of a clash of understanding or not much understanding. The others understandably go for from the system perspective. And it's an engineer's nightmare. Engineer's dream would be, of course, that, you know, I tell, you know, yes, you guys want to go that way. So I will dictate, you take that bus, you walk to that station, you people will do this and this and this. I actually even learned somewhere that the transportation engineering was actually taken somewhere in the 20s from wastewater and sewage. So it was those guys, because you had to come up with something. And actually, if you look at the traffic flow formulas, they're pretty much the same as with pipes. So the idea is we put the, because I can dictate where the wastewater goes to, I can dictate it like this and this. The problem is,
which is kind of mean if you think of like people compared to wastewater and I don't know, like cables, electricity and all kinds of things.
Yeah. Thing is, we're a bit more unpredictable, aren't we? That's the problem.
Yeah, a little bit. That's the problem. This is
into the formulas. And that's the kind of the thing. And we try to, the engineer side tries to solve this with this attitude. And then there's the individual who say, I don't care what you say. I'll do whatever I do. And the problem of this is because at this side, the sentiment that we have here, it is about my freedom. And freedom is an extremely valuable and extremely individual thing. It's a sentiment. And if we don't buy that, we go with the rational of mine. We're not going to solve these issues. So it has to be a mix of both.
The idea of unbundling the car, the idea of having something which brings the same value of personal freedom, but in a different package. And this is, to me, one of the core ideas of mobility as a service. What is your definition of mobility as a service? And did it change over the last years since we met?
Yeah, it's been changing a lot. You know, I may be called father of it, being the one talking about it for a long time. And I know when it was born, but I've never been alone doing all of this. So I've tried to avoid making a really sort of scientific definition of what it is. But it's also...
But you came up with the idea in the beginnings with Hans, probably you're probably the two names in the industry coming up with the idea of mobility as a service.
There's been a lot of people in this, and it would take the whole podcast to name everyone that's been on it. So what I love about it is that it's such a movement that people just get excited about it. I always like to go from the user perspective. There's the system element, and there's lots of other. But if I ask what would fulfill people's freedom, and the answer is pretty much always the same. They need certainty. They need to be guaranteed that they can have that freedom, as we need to go then define the freedom a bit more. And that means anywhere, anytime, on a whim. So spontaneously, without thinking. Because, and why it has to go through that, because we have to look at what the winner now does, where people are willing to spend most of their money, and that's the car. And the essence of the car is also pretty much essence of that freedom. And that is that at any given time, I could go, and I could, where could I go? Anywhere, at any time. And this is, the thought of that is so powerful. And how do I justify that with numbers? Let's take Tokyo. In Tokyo, over half of the cars, I mean, in Tokyo, you have to buy a dedicated parking space or have that before you can even buy a car. But still, half of those cars are used less than once a week. So definitely for a transportation engineer, I would be, ha, 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 they're silly people. Why don't they just, you know, don't not use it? And they would have so much, but that's not the right thing. The right thing is, hey, they're willing to pay that much for the idea that I could. And unless we bring something where we can say, yes, you can, you could. It is about dreams, because car is a dream product. It is the big story of humankind for any economic history or any industry. It's by far the best, what the car industry has been able to sell. We have to give a bigger dream.
How do you, or why would you say that people like us in the industry, who most of us at least got the idea of mobility as a service based on single apps, so we all are used to moving around in different apps with different services all the time, and of course it's complicated, and of course we all get the idea of this one app to rule it all, but why do you think that in you and the industry and me, why we are okay with moving around like this and others, the majority in fact, isn't?
I think there's quite a simple reason. Learning now with and from the users is when they love us, it's the convenience, you know, to start the car, it's not even this anymore, it's this. And you can see how much actually it does when you take a new Volkswagen that you don't even have to open the door. It just knows. It is extremely underestimated how much people value their convenience. I can tell a story. There's a journalist told me about something completely different. And after the interview, he said that, okay, hey, this whim's been around. So I've been a car and sort of car enthusiast, a petrol head all my life. I'm a 50 plus guy. But now that whim came along, me and wife, we sold the car and started using whim. And I really almost had a heart attack because I thought that you're not in a target group. Why would you do that?
Why? Please tell me. Yes. How did I convince you?
And then he went, well, you know, it's for once, it's not that, you know, these bits and pieces want to sell themselves. You know, I have to take the bike separately and then I have to take the train and they all compete against which one or a taxi or these and all of this. For once, I felt that someone's on my side. And the convenience of it made him jump. So it's actually not that much. It's not that much. And I suppose one of the misconceptions of thinking about MaaS that it's the super app that excites people, it's not. It's the certainty of the cost. You know, car is brilliant. You pay for it. You pay all of those things. And then it's only the gasoline cost. And even that you don't think about. So it's kind of free to drive all the time. You don't pay for a ticket and all of these. That's one thing, so that you have that. At the same time, when I ask people what would really make them give up the car, it's not to have everything in one. That's not enough. Someone has to promise that, look, if this fails, that one. I have enough, and I will take care that, look, if everything else fails, I'll send you a helicopter. We're not quite there yet. But it's
I was going to ask how do you maintain this promise? I mean, I the idea is beautiful and does make a lot of sense, and I think you're on the right track in terms of thinking about what people actually want and this and selling them the feeling instead of an application. But how do you actually make sure that you can keep that promise?
Not easily. I know that you know a lot about this. The only way of making them feel comfortable with this is that your supply density is so big, so good. It means that you have to have everything. If this taxi company doesn't work, you have another one. If this car share fails, you have another one. You have another one, another one. And you have different modes. And at that point, they start thinking, well, yeah, if you have all that, then yeah, that starts to be enough. There's surprising many who are ready for this level that also we are on now. You get a bit more, you get to roaming, you have the whole Germany or these and they start to be in it.
Referring to your bundles, right?
Yeah, it is about bundling. It is also about giving them luxury. It's saying that, hey, you've done 20 days where you've used only bikes and scooters and public transport and walked. So next time you take a car, don't take that mediocre car. Here's a Tesla for you. Here's a big Audi. Here's this and this. It is about this balancing with the thing. So in a way, what we want to do is to give people access to dream things that they never had before, and by being smart. So this is the trade-off that you can make. And it seems that it is actually more doable than you think. And how to do it also, and why it's so early days that you shouldn't make too many conclusions about MaaS by looking at, I know that we're the furthest in these, but they're not even MaaS products yet in that sense, what we're doing. you need to have roaming that opens a lot of this. I can tell you another example. I had 25 DOT students in my office when people were still traveling. They
back in 2019 or in the beginning of 2020.
They none of them had a car. So I asked, when you get a job, how many of you are going to get a car? Every single hand was up. I said, okay, let's play a game. What if I gave you, they came from Rotterdam, so I give you everything that you have in Rotterdam. I give you all the public transport, all the bikes and the car shares and micromobility, everything that you have in there, and taxis included, as much as you can. How many of you would trade the money that you put into your car for this? And about 20% of them said, that sounds like something. I said, okay, let's stop up the game. I say, let's do the whole of Holland. And I even put Belgium in it. So you have both countries, anything you ever want. And almost half of them said, ooh, that starts to sound like, okay, I'm in for it. Same price as a car. And said, okay, let's go further. Let's put the whole Europe. Now, what the hell? Let's put the whole world into it. Hop on any train, any taxi, any car share, any bike share, any car rental, anything that you ever thought with the same price as your car. How about that? Every hand was, of course, but you can't do that. That would cost so much. And I said, well, have a look at yourself. If I give you that, do you think that you'll be every day you will be in New York using all of this? And by the way, if you are in New York, you're not going to be in Amsterdam. So I actually can. So we need to get these dreams to people. And it takes a while before we're not even, if we take the analogy from car industry, we're not even at T4 yet.
What do you mean by T4?
Well, T4 was sort of what that started the whole boom of cars for people. It kind of got the price and the service level to a credible that you started actually shipping all of those. Only after T4 were you able to then start selling the Chryslers and the Lexuses and the Ferraris and the Mercedes. Well, they were there before, but in a mass way. So the basics need to be there, and it takes a while.
So there's this Finnish Act on Transportation as the basis for mass development, at least in Finland. Can you elaborate on this a little bit? I believe you know a little bit about this. How did it help to grow mobility as a service?
Well, one of the forgotten players in the whole mass scene is the Finnish Ministry of Transport and Communications. It's lucky that it's a Ministry of Transport and Communications. So the same guys who actually back in the days wrote the laws for how GSM markets should look like are actually taking care of transportation as well. And already since 2011, 2012, this enabling MaaS type of services has been at the core of their transport policy. Actually, even the term MaaS came from it didn't come from me, it came from the Ministry of Transport and Communications. So they
didn't know that.
Don't get, I may have presented the concept, but they came up with the term. It was a lot of people, but eventually it was them who coined the term. So they deserve all the credits that there is. And they started looking at how did they govern so that, you know, if you look at, for example, Finnish markets, we still have the lowest prices for mobile phones. It's a pretty big country and not many people. Those operators here, they transmit most mobile data by far in all of this, and still they're
making money.
So there had to be something in the regulation that was right. Companies are doing well. People get good services with pretty low fees. And so they've been quite good at this. So they started saying, okay, these are the elements that need to be there. We need to make sure, for example, that, you know, transportation, those resources that are used in cities and beyond, that they can be cross-used for operators so that there's no dual kinds of resources over there. So they made it compulsory that all APIs need to be open on fair term basis so that these operators like us can start competing in an open ground, and it's better that they make the rules so that everybody gets it. But they made a lot of different changes. So I would say good law. Of course, creating a completely new law, it's hard then to make sure that everybody follows that. And it's not a secret that it's taken a while to actually implement all that so that they were actually in action.
What are the hurdles then? It seems like there are some.
Well, you make a completely new law with this kind of that, you know, APIs open. And if not all players are willing to do that, or they felt that I didn't want this law, there's a lot of things how you can kind of say, yeah, we abate this, but then on the other hand, make it impossible. We know these examples from many, many industries, and it's not necessarily something that many would want to do, but it takes time also to adjust.
What about the idea of open data in that context? Is that something that was more of a problem to follow for some of the ones that you just mentioned, or is that something that actually helped to boost the movement, at least in Finland?
It has boosted the movement a lot, and also brought on to a small country like Finland a lot of investors to you know, make the ecosystem fly higher and higher. But of course, you know, law is a law, and if you start by that, then the actual technical implications and such are a bit more trickier, and it tends to take a bit of time to do that. There are other methods, like cities have a lot of power. I personally especially like the way that Antwerp's handling this. So as of May, they may have given them a bit more flex time with that, but quite soon, if you have transportation within Antwerp and you're a transportation provider, you have to show that you are integrated to at least 2 MaaS operators. I really like that. Cities have much more power in creating these markets than they actually think. And I honestly believe that actually the biggest innovations are not with the companies like ours. They will happen in the cities. How do they utilize the market power and the innovation and the investment power of the private to actually fulfill their societal goals, but without forgetting that this needs to be sold to the end user. And it's these kinds of things, especially like what Antwerp is doing, that I think that are setting the example. Not to say I know in my hometown Helsinki is doing quite a lot of good things as well, but at the moment in Antwerp they're really pushing to make this happen. And what they have is already a competitive MaaS market.
I agree, and especially because MaaS is also about connecting silos, collaboration between both mobility service providers, MaaS operators like you, and also cities and regulations. And I like that you bring up Belgium, because they also recently did some smart moves in their policies regarding company mobility schemes and the taxation of these, which I think also helps or will help in the future to creating the right incentives to companies help their employees to move around. And that brings me to the question, if you are in that area as well, these white label company MaaS solutions.
Yes and no. We've done some of those projects. What sometimes is forgotten in this is, take the comparison with car industry again. Companies provide employees with cars, but they don't do them white label, do they? They buy Audis and such.
It's a very, very good sales channel for the car industry.
Yeah, and it becomes quite costly if a company with employees would want somehow their specific and dedicated MaaS solution, because that becomes heavy. So whilst we do actually, and we've trialed a couple of these, and we are doing it, there's a balance, and the sort of definition of white label tends to vary from something where, you know, you have a candy wrapper but the same candy inside, from something where everything from chocolate filling to whatever it is specified and it becomes a project. I think that the wrapper part is an easy one, because then you don't have to get into the whole mixes and such. But if you want every single company, you want to define the flavor of this chocolate and go to the origin of the chocolate, it becomes a bit too tough. So
it's again very, very individual, right?
It is, and eventually it all boils down to the employees, the people having the right to choose what they want. Otherwise, I've seen some of those trials and they haven't been too successful, because if company starts to be like transportation engineers and they say, well, this is the solution you use. Yeah, it's not
kind of, I was hoping there's some angle to the question why Mars doesn't really get off the ground until yet. And if it's the customer itself who still doesn't believe in the promise of a Mars system, or if it's the city or the national governments not creating the right incentives or the right push and pull measures to help getting this off the ground, or also public transport. I mean, we know each other from our time back at Hochbahn, and it was difficult to get started and to bring Wim to Hamburg. And all these things, of course, in my opinion or in my perspective, limit the speed of Mars taking off the ground. And this is why I thought maybe it's the companies having or using the leverage that they have. But what is your take? Why does it take so long to create these things, if you say that the technical implementation, the wrapping of the candy, as you just said, isn't the big thing, the big deal?
I'd say let's start from the end user. We've done studies in multiple cities in Europe, and it seems that there's 38% of people that are willing to actually replace their car with a good service. So there seems to be, and anywhere we go, you get to a level high enough, and people are really willing to pick up on that one. Now, the problem is, what is the level that they want? And since this is a market that's not like we can do in stealth mode, we can just, you know, create the perfect service and there it is. If you have a game, you can do everything together. Actually, if you're a car industry, you can dictate the whole ecosystem. Now, with Mars, and this is the hard part of it, you need different pieces. You need partners that are willing to play with you to create the actual service. It's highly dependent on third-party service providers that actually do the physical service. It's those buses, those taxis, those trains that actually create the package and the bundle. Now, this is where it gets tricky because it's understandably... people are, or these players, these organizations or companies, they are afraid for losing control, losing the end user ownership, or however you want to call it, which to some extent I understand. There's fear, and there should be fear. For example, if Wim would be the only one providing, then we would be getting too much power. Let's say in Hamburg, if we were the only Mars operator, we would be getting way too much power, and then yes, the TSPs, the transportation service providers, would have a risk that, you know, we start dictating where to go and so on. But if you believe that these aggregated services are the future, then by opening up fast to as many as possible, kind of balance the risk. That's how I would put it.
Right.
We just haven't found the balance. There's a lot of power games where the strategy, because in transportation, everyone's big. Either you're big globally or you're big locally, and you feel that I have all the power. So it seems to be that the strategy, sorry to say, hopefully no Germans are listening, but especially in Germany, a bit in France as well, seems to be that, you know, yes, my strategy towards Mars is that everyone will integrate to me, and I will integrate to no one.
That's the reversing of the open data and the reversing of the aggregator idea in itself.
Yeah, open data towards my black hole.
That's
a bit roughly said, because of course there's a lot of more understandable reasons and fears and such in it, and I do get them. But at the same time, we just don't get off the ground. So it is hard to say that, hey, well, the Mars didn't take up that easily. Yeah, because we didn't even try. It's not been tried anywhere in real form. To really convince people that this is comparative to your car, you really need a really big supply. That much we've learned for sure.
Not even in Finland? I mean... you're at least as close as possible to that dream, aren't you?
It's a good start. The take-up is really nice. People are really keen on it, but it's still early days. And in all honesty, the ones you see in our website are not yet the true Mars services, how I perceive it. glad to say we haven't published, but I can too, because nobody would ever hear reveal the secret.
Exactly, just between you and me.
we are actually trialing what I'm extremely enthusiastic about, something we call now WhimRide, which is truly a service level based offering. Now that it takes time, because before I can ever promise to you that, hey, here's a service level that I can guarantee you, I need to know the partners that actually provide the service. And that takes learning. You need to have these pay as you go and let's say more production based packages before you can really go to the real level of mass that, hey, I've got your freedom, I'll make it sure. So we've got these packages where people pay something close to what they're paying for their car. And there was actually surprisingly many who wanted to try it out. But then you put an address into it, and on a normal day, it'll give you, hey, walk to the station or take the bike or take the scooter or take train and then go here. But then when it's heavy raining, we say that, hey, here's a taxi for you. It's included in your package. In any of these, we give you with a small upgrade, you can always upgrade. So we want to see the balance. But it's the first time, because the whole logic of making money out of multimodal is spinning the wheel of multimodal towards. So you need to decouple the actual price from production cost, because then it's in our interest to do low production cost. And lowest is walking, then biking, public transport.
Absolutely. As it. Sure.
And this is in the interest of the city as well, of course.
As a customer, I can currently choose between, I believe, the pay-as-you-go, then the Urban 30, the WHIM Weekend, and the WHIM Unlimited. I'm wondering how you got to exactly these packages.
Well, we always do a lot of market research. We do a lot of testing before we launch all of these. And then it's also an evolution in the market. So the first step of magic that is easy for the users to understand is, hey, everything that you ever used now in one app. So there's one thing we always want to do before we really get into the markets, that for persons, at least some group of people, we can take care of all their trips. We are capable of, even with the pay-as-you-go, you know, you can rely every trip we can handle. So we need to have enough basics there. Normally means public transport, taxi-like services, access to cars, and oftentimes also bikes or micromobility. So when we have those, is to say, hey, you're not paying extra. All of these in a simple format, just go and use, no commitments. That's the pay-as-you-go. And in the early days, and most of the people will go there. Of course, it's really hard to monetize that, because you're just, you know, a ticket vending machine in many ways.
Exactly, yeah.
And there's not much, but it's to get started. Then the next ones, like you said, Urban 30 is, you have a sort of price in mind for a low-end package, where normally the public transport is kind of a comparison for you, where we can say, hey, this is something that you can replace your car with, but we understand that you're not going to commit to hundreds or thousands of euros today, but have a look at it. So you've got all the public transport and we've got all these extras for you, so you can really get used to it. And mostly this is where we are in Helsinki, because it takes time to market evolution. On the other hand, we can start coming from the business side. I've never been in a company where in any market we go into, companies give us inbound calls that, do you have a business subscription? Do you have a business subscription? We'd like to give an alternative to company cars. Sadly, the states and governments outside of Belgium are really not helping. So even in Finland, for that package that is for public transport and such, we have to pay more taxes than a company car. Germany, don't get me started with the 9% Regelung. They could start the whole mass market by just saying mass gets the same treatment.
Yeah, that would be a very smart first thing to start off with. But yeah, that should be another podcast.
Not all these sustainability issues, and just by this one tax thing, you could do open up the whole market. But let's not get into that one. So we can go from the business and these low-end ones, but still, these are not the ones that we're going for. So only now, the one that we have in pilot is the type that we really want. The unlimited is sort of a first version of the buffet type of offering. The whole idea is to get into buffet type of offerings, but several different ones, that here's a buffet for you for 100, 200, 300, and so on. So we have these offerings, but it takes time before people learn that, but also that we have enough capability to actually develop those. And this is where then how we do it and how we do WIM rides and everything, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of user tests and market research and being there with them and piloting and this information we've been gathering from many cities for years now. So we have some hunch of what sells and what doesn't.
I'm sure you do. I mean, selling masks to people obviously means to have the right price tag for the right service level. And now when you are competing with the car, where the monthly payment is sort of invisible, because it's mostly amortization and taxes and gasoline, people don't really think about what they actually pay, these 500 euros that are sometimes popping up. My question is, I'm imagining that this is a tricky one to find the right level of price and service level, and I would like to know, how do you do this?
Well, if I take an example for the Urban 30, which is sort of it's a core and close to the public transport offering, of course, with differentiation, because otherwise it wouldn't make any sense. Let's say price elasticity that people are sort of, if it is 62 or 59, it has a huge impact on people buying it.
Really?
Yeah, it does. Now go to weekend, pretty much the same offering, and just say that, hey, you could go and pick up a car for any weekends, and then we put a price of 250 and people think that's really cheap. So you see where the value is. In a way, how to make money in MaaS is that you have to have the car as the value creator, because that's where the value is. And then the less it's used, the more money you're making. And that's kind of the whole trick of this game. And this is why the car is extremely relevant in the whole MaaS, because otherwise the value creation, it becomes a utility and it's hard to make that into a viable business. I'll take another sort of angle into this. I get that a lot, especially from transport engineers, that, you know, the right way in MaaS is to try to educate people and tell them what the real cost of a car is. But actually, no, I don't want that. I would actually just want that they don't think about MaaS as well. They just want it so much that they pay even more than they do. So that the mindset that I think that the industry should have is, how do we create such value that people also do not want to think about their MaaS cost, because they just love it so much that they just want to say, okay, but yeah, but I have to, I need this. This is something I don't want to think about. I think.
But isn't this some kind of a dichotomy? Sorry, excuse me.
I think it's much better route than trying to say people, hey, you're paying so much.
Obviously, yeah, because then they either say, no, this is not true, or they wouldn't be, yeah, like you said, it's not the best way to educate. But what you said kind of feels like a dichotomy. On the one hand side, we talk about luxury. We talk about having something which is so valuable that you're willing to pay so much money. On the other side, though, we are going fast pace and towards commoditization, aren't we?
Well,
if you say we shouldn't think about it, then you just use it and you just take it for granted every day.
Yes and no. But of course, as a market, if the telecom industry talks about ARPU, the average revenue per user. And why would we as an industry want to commoditize this? I think that there needs to be sort of a flex of 2,000 euro MaaS all the way to 20 euro MaaS, for whichever way you're willing to pay. And the need for this is also, it has to do with the ecosystem. If we don't liberate the money from car ownership, that holds about 76% of the money that people have in their pockets for mobility. If that money is not liberated, then it becomes the service level or the production, the new things that we can add into the mix in this ecosystem are not going to be good enough. So I think it's much better route for everyone's sake that we'd rather go for the value of a car, because it's a great offering, and we have all of these cars and we have all of that, and then the money is drawn by if people don't use as much as they think. Or the idea is that, hey, if you only use your car once a month, why don't you get a package from us, and when you do need the car, we'll give you a better car. You can change it every time you need it. So how about that? So it's this, why would we deliberately drop the value to this? Because it will be dropped anyway. But I think it's important for everyone, and this includes also public transport, because for everyone's sake, it's good if you rather liberate a lot of money, so there's much more money to be spared, then just drop the money down.
It sounds like as if you came from the business side, from the value side that people should be wanting or that you could create. The other side, though, is that most of mobility service providers and also public transport is not really profitable. So hardly any of them make a dime from the services. And this is where I don't really get the get where these two ends could meet. Do you have an answer to that?
Well, I think I do. The idea is that if there's more money to be handed out to all services, including car shares, including public transport, including all of these, so more and more people pay that 616 euros, which is the average that people are paying for when they own a car. That means that there's much more room to play. It doesn't mean that public transport should not be subsidized, definitely should be, so that it's always the winner in the minds of everyone. But it gives a lot of leverage of developing all kinds of different. It gives also grounds for widening the service of public transportation. It's just that I believe that it makes sense that we kind of give as a subsidy, we make sure that public transport has a good fighting chance all the time. That more revenues for more people using more public transport eventually means also, if the ratio of subsidy remains, that we can widen the service level all the time. And we all know that if you have more money to make the service level better, there's more usage and it becomes a positive spiral. So yes, I do think that these both can actually coexist. But in a way, it has to be that the total of mass goes with the end user terms, because if you set the competition straight, and that's the car ownership, there is no other way of making this anyways smart. Then there has to be choices, and that's just given, and it has to be also business for the combination of it. The good part of this is because there are subsidized public transport. So for any mass operator that kind of separates the price from actual production cost, it makes all the sense in the world to use as much public transport as possible, because it's the most cost-effective one. So it is about, if the business model is correct, that for mass operators, for companies, it makes sense to be as cost-effective as possible. And that means if the model is such that you're not just reselling. Because if the model is a pay-as-you-go type of thing, then for a company, it makes sense to resell those that gives you biggest margins. And that's definitely not going to be BT. But if the model is such that, you know, you separate your income from the cost, then you try to go for the lowest production cost. And that's then PT. And I think this is the really relevant one. How do we make sure that the model is more towards this kind of all-inclusive package where companies have an interest to push the production costs down.
And as far as I understand you can do all of this by setting free the money that is now allocated into privately owned cars.
It's the only way of making this sustainable in any ways, is if you don't liberate that money, then it is hard to make any kind of model work. The sad part of it is that cars are really great. So by saying bad things about them, you won't get anywhere, because they really are good.
I'd like to know from you, what's your take on micromobility in that scheme? How's bike share and scooter share a relevant part in your service offering?
The reality is that with just the plain vanilla, which is public transport, taxis, and a bit of car rentals, the mix of that for people is a bit boring. You add in all kinds of micromobility for the short-term scooters, and what I also believe really is those electric bike shares that give you a bit more range, and they really complement everything. So you have a trustworthy mix of, okay, all my trips that I have in mind are covered. Because we really need to understand, when people do go and they buy their cars, they're not thinking about their next ride. they're thinking about, am I covered for a year? And micromobility in all of these, they give the supply density in the minds of people. Okay, I'm so well covered. Because if you see a map and say, wow, all these are mine, well, that's good. And if there's so many modes, and especially these cool new things are also included, it just gives them more edge, and it pumps up also the subscription price.
I like the idea of looking at the map and seeing all the little dots and believing that these are all mine. I could potentially all access all of them. That makes a lot of sense. I saw that you recently also integrated tier scooters into your bundles, but they're not really integrated as part of the bundle. So even in the Wim Weekend or the Urban, you still have to pay the regular €1 plus whatever it is, depending on the city. Why is that? Why is it not integrated as a flat rate deal?
Of course, we're hoping for that. I love an idea of putting bikes and micromobility and electric bikes and a bit of extras every now and then into a package to complement also public transport. We, of course, definitely our aim. Both ways, this is a trust game. It is about our trust to the end user, but it's also our trust to our great partners, which Tier is the first one. Hopefully we get a few more to come quite soon. And both ways, we have to learn in real life with real customers, with the pay-as-you-go, that things function. And then it's easier to go for different types of packages and bundling. So we have to prove ourselves to those partners, and we have to learn with them so that we can also utilize them. And only then is it ready for packages. So as much as I'm an eager and always a bit impatient guy, but with these you have to. It's a real world out there. It's not just games, you know. People really use this and they rely on it. So it's a good way of learning the ropes first.
I'm thinking, like, when I talk about these things with people and they ask me, hey, scooter sharing is so expensive. I mean, this is for the same amount of money I can already get a car to go, car sharing car. And I thought about this and I thought, this is interesting, and it does makes sense that you get a car for, let's say, 19 to 20 cents per minute, and on the other side you have to pay 20, 25 cents per minute for a tiny little scooter. But on the other side, I thought, what is the job to be done? Like, and what is the value that you get from it? And for example, in the summertime, if it's nice to ride outside on a bicycle or on a scooter, you get the wind in your hair, you get the sun on your nose, and it's more enjoyable than sitting in a car. Although on the other side, it might be more enjoyable to sit in a taxi ride where you can still check some emails and do stuff before you get to your appointment. And this is eventually brings, I think, brings me to the question of the value of a ride, like I said initially, and if we shouldn't measure minutes, but smiles, like Horace Didiou keeps saying. And I like the idea, but I don't really know how to implement this into a business business model. Do you have any thoughts about this?
Well, Horace is right. Using Bond service keeps me smiling all the time. When I use it, I just keep on smiling. It's just such a great service. The thing is, it's right. Eventually, this will be about people are willing to spend about 90 minutes in transport every day to get to the places they love or want to or need to be. If we can turn that time into something that they enjoy instead of offer or sacrifice, then we're on to something. Mm-hmm. And then they're not thinking about the price per this, price per that. They just want to do. We have examples of, I've interviewed those that are unlimited customers for us. And I remember a couple of them saying, look, because they can use taxi. And it's, wow, I can use taxi as much as I want and all of that. And this one guy say, after using it for a while, and it was a sunny day like today over there, and then he was sitting in a taxi in crowded and feeling nauseous and looking at these people with city bikes with smiles on, and he just, what the hell am I doing? Got off the taxi and took the bike and started using. So when you don't have to think about that, well, with the same money I could use the taxi, but you love using those e-scooters. So it's no more about money. And especially if you have a bundle, and this is where the whole idea of Moss can be in. If you like I mean, if it's raining, go on, take the taxi. But if it's not, then take the one. And remember, there's this one thing. It's the convenience. And they've gone over the critical mass. So you see those scooters all the time. They are faster to get started than a car share or a taxi. And that, for these short trips, is all relevance. So there are so many elements in the minds of people that having resilience by all different kinds of modes, I think it's the only best way. They want this certainty of access to everything.
Do you see any kinds of effect of COVID-19 on how people move, especially in Finland, maybe these last weeks?
Well, it would be foolish to say that no, everything is as normal. Of course, public transport's dropped significantly, even though it's not blocked yet in Helsinki. And I really feel they have a hard time struggling with this, because of course nobody could anticipate that. At the same time, and of course also our urban 30s have been dropping, not as much in proportion, but a lot, of course. At the same time, we've seen there's a city bike subscription we started immediately when we saw the COVID coming in, and we've gained just about the same amount into the city bike subscriptions than we've lost in the other part. At the same time, we wanted to make sure that people get back to also using public transport. So we made an offer that, you know, if you commit now, and when once this is over and you have flexibility yourself as a customer, when you want to take it, we'll give you the first month half price, because we don't want them to start learning just to use cars and think of that way. And actually,
that's a nice idea.
The adoption of that was even more than what the drop was. So there are some good things about it, even though I'm not trying to fake that. No, nothing affected. This is a serious thing for us as well. And of course, we want to be there for our partners as well. But also for the users is that, hey, let's get you back into normal life. It's one of those tricks. So what I would say from the COVID altogether is that one of the learnings could be that the resilience of multimodality really showing why in any city also you should have multiple modes, because you cannot anticipate these kinds of things. And then the more chances people have, the better they're off.
That is a statement. I like that very much. And that brings me to the last question is, what are you looking forward to, let's say, in the next 10 years until 2030? You as a visionary in the field of mobility, what are you looking forward to?
Well, I understand that, you know, there's been that everything changes in a year. I never thought that it would be. It takes a lot of time. But what I really am eager about is that people start getting, first of all, you start getting these service level based buffet type of subscriptions for mobility, and they will be really being as good or even better than owning a car, and adding that kind of element. The next phase of this will be, and we're doing partly trialing that out in Japan, is when you start combining your living with your mobility, because the cross benefits of, there's one thing in urban planning that I know that keeps on bugging everyone, is that when you build a new real estate development site, do you make parking spaces? How much do you make? And if you don't, then people will not come because they don't have anything in comparison. Until there's likes of us that come in with a service promise and say, hey, we promise you have car, you have everything you need, so you don't really need the car. And until somebody has that promise, the real estate developers cannot skip the parking spaces. And now, since we're starting to do that really in a places where we give the service promise and there's a real estate developer who skips in the parking spaces, can we get into really these implications are so much bigger when you start really thinking about them. And I'm expecting a lot from that. Then eventually the competition will turn into how do we entertain you in those 90 minutes? So it's no longer going to be how do I get there, but what do I do in the meanwhile? And those are going to be really interesting. What I'm also so eager to look at is how urban planning, and this is what I love about Hamburg with the switch points. I think this definitely is the future, because the whole thinking of urban planning is based on the idea that everybody owns a car. we have corridors, this and this. In this type of world where that's not the the main way of fulfilling your freedom, it is about hubs and how interconnected, how lovable those hubs are. And that's where I think Hamburg is setting the pace for this.
Thank you, Sampo. Thank you very much. I enjoyed talking about this with you a lot. And I wish you a pleasant weekend. Stay safe, stay healthy, stay at home if that is possible. And if not, get out there and go for a run. Thank you very much, Sampo.
Vielen Dank. Ciao. Bye-bye.
Vielen herzlichen Dank fürs Zuhören. Wenn dir die Folge gefallen hat, dann freue ich mich sehr über deine Unterstützung. Am einfachsten geht das, wenn du in deiner Podcast-App auf Abonnieren klickst und natürlich auch mit ein paar Sternchen und einem Kommentar bei Apple Podcasts. Außerdem freue ich mich sehr, wenn du diesen Podcast bei FreundInnen und KollegInnen fleißig weiterempfiehlst und auch gerne mal bei steadyhq.com/freifahrt vorbeischaust. Ich hoffe, ihr seid mit dieser neuen Folge bereits auf ein paar neue Gedanken gekommen. Vielleicht sind bohrende Fragen aufgetaucht oder ihr seht das Thema Mikromobilität bereits mit ein wenig anderen Augen. Schickt mir gerne weiterhin eure Fragen und Kommentare an podcast@freifahrt.org oder auf Instagram und Twitter. Dort findet ihr mich ebenfalls unter dem Handle Freifahrt. Ich freue mich, wenn du wieder reinhörst und wünsche jetzt eine gute Fahrt und lass die Haare wehen.